Around. Let's do a little bit of a recap. So the first week in this series, we spent some time with a man named Abraham and his son Isaac in a story in Genesis where Abraham is asked by God to bring his son to the top of a mountain and sacrifice him. What on earth? But we learn that even though that is the practice of the culture that Abraham came out of, that you sacrifice your firstborn son to a pagan god, the God of Israel, Abraham's God, intervenes to communicate to him, what is God like? I am not like that. I am not like that. Then last week, we move into a space of saying, okay, if we don't worship a God where we follow all these rituals and rules, and if we don't have to pay, then somebody does have to pay. We looked at a story that Jesus tells his disciples about a vineyard owner. And then Jesus says this vineyard owner put the vineyard in the hands of his servants while he moved away. And so then when he's living away, he sends his now new servants to the vineyard to collect the fruit upon harvest. But the people who are running the vineyard terribly mistreat them, even unto death. And so this vineyard owner says, well, I'll just send my own son, because then certainly they will treat him different. But it was the same story. They ended up killing him too. And this is where we say, well, someone has to pay for that. But it's here in that parable where Jesus starts alluding to the fact that it's going to be him who pays. Grace. God is like grace. When we think and we want people to pay for things, or we think we need and ought to pay, God is like grace. So after these parables and stories, and within, Jesus has spent some really condensed time with his disciples. And we're going to pick up the story now in a place called Gethsemane, where Jesus and his disciples find themselves shortly after sharing a large meal called the Passover together. So a little cliffhanger, we're going to get back to the Passover in a few minutes. But we're going to pick up the story in Gethsemane. So if you have your Bibles, you can open them if you want to, or it'll be on the screens or your phone, whatever you choose. We're going to look at Mark chapter 14, verses 32 to 42. Here we go. I feel like I need to do some lunges or something. Okay. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that, if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet, not what I will, but what you will." Then he returned to his disciples, and he found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Once more, he went away and prayed the same thing. And when he came back, he found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They didn't know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise. Let us go. Here comes my betrayer." Whew, that is hearty. So what is going on here? There's a lot going on here. But first of all, Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. What does Gethsemane mean? It means olive press, or found within an olive grove where you harvest your olives. So what do you do with olives in an olive grove? I have never personally seen an olive grove outside of a picture. So here's what I learned. You run them through an olive press, and there are actually caves located in the Garden of Gethsemane where they would keep the press itself, because why collect a ton of olives and then ship them off somewhere else to do the work when you could do the work right where you actually are? So let's throw a picture up here. This is a picture of an olive press. And so what they would do is olives would be gathered into these bags or sacks and then stacked on top of one another, where a beam would come out, weighed down by rocks, and as the pressure would press on the sacks of olives, they would continue to add more and more weight, because the more pressure, the more oil. And what is happening to Jesus in the garden here? Jesus in this space is under incredible, wretched amounts of pressure. He knows what's about to happen. And within moments, his friends, his disciples, are going to betray him. There's going to be soldiers marching down the hill to arrest him and eventually escort him to his death. And so great is his torment that in Luke 22:44, it says that his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. He is literally sweating blood because he's being crushed by the intense pressure of everything that is going on around him. And where are his disciples? You could say it. Sleeping. It's too quiet in here. You guys could talk if you want. Okay. They're sleeping. Mark 14, 37, 41, let's go back. He says, he returned to his disciples and he found them sleeping. Simon, he said to Peter, also known as Peter, are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for just 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you won't fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Once more, he went away and prayed the same thing. But then when he came back, he found them sleeping. Their eyes were heavy. They didn't know what to say to him. And when he returned the third time, he said, are you sleeping and resting? Enough. Enough of this. Why are they sleeping if Jesus is undergoing such incredible pressure and they're close to them? How can they not see? How can they not know? So here's where we talk about awareness. Somehow they were not aware. They're not aware of the reality that Jesus knows what's to come. So we're going to look further into this in a few minutes, but we know about these disciples and Jesus that they've just come from their Passover meal. And in a traditional Passover meal, there would be 4 cups of wine. Now, if you've had 4 cups of wine, chances are you might be a little sleepy, yeah? But there's more. There's more than that going on. It's here in this garden that Jesus is actually arrested. And I want to throw another picture up on the screen. This is a picture of standing in the Garden of Gethsemane. And up on the hill, if you see that sort of dome-like shape, that is the Temple Mount where these soldiers are going to be coming from. So if you are standing or maybe like wine napping in this garden, but there is an army of soldiers coming down this hill. You can see them, and you are no longer napping, yeah? So it's not just about sleeping or not sleeping. It's about awareness. And even though the disciples could not necessarily 100% wear Jesus' shoes, nor do we have the ability to 100% step into somebody else's shoes, just because you can't do that, wear their shoes, doesn't mean you can't be aware of what's going on in the circumstances around you or around what's going on in the people's lives around you. Jesus has, in fact, at this point, he has served and poured into, he has spent time with, he's coached and encouraged and loved this group of people that he calls friends. Have you ever invested in somebody and they turn their back on you? Or have you ever had a moment where you needed somebody, that whatever reality you were standing in, that you just needed them to be, just be aware. Just aware, maybe a family member, a group of friends, or the church. Jesus is actually looking for this awareness too. He communicates with them three different times. Guys, are you sleeping? Wake up. Are you aware? But further than this, how does Jesus respond? In all of his agony, Jesus cries out to God and says in verse 36, "Father, everything is possible for you. Everything. Would you take this cup from me? Yet, not what I will, but what you will." This cup, of all the things that he could say right now, he's going to ask God to take a cup. What cup? I mean, he's just had a couple cups, probably at the Passover meal. Why is he choosing to talk about this now? So let's flip over to Mark 14, because this cup is no small thing, verses 12 through 16. It says, "On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when it was customary to sacrifice the Passover lamb, Jesus' disciples asked him, 'Where do you want us to go and make preparation for you to eat the Passover?' So he sent two of his disciples, telling them, 'Go into this city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. Say to the owner of the house he enters, "The teacher asks, where is my guest room, where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there." The disciples left, went into the city, and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared the Passover. And then over in the Gospel of Luke, which is another account of the same story, Luke 22:14 says, "When the time came, Jesus and the disciples sat down together at the table. Jesus said, 'I have been eagerly desiring to eat this Passover meal with you before my sufferings begin.'" So what is this Passover meal? And why should it matter to us? And why does it matter here? The Passover meal remembers and celebrates the reality that there was a nation of people called the Israelites who were in slavery in Egypt. And God, through a man named, thanks guys, Moses, brought the entire, it's just too quiet, so every once in a while, just throw it out there. Okay, Moses, he brought the entire nation out of slavery into freedom. So Passover is an annual reliving of this Exodus journey and honoring it. Jesus himself was a Jew, and Jews were required under the law of Moses to celebrate the Passover every year to remember their freedom from Egypt. So that means that Jesus celebrated the Passover as a child and as he grew. And here, now we're seeing him celebrate it with his disciples. And catch this. Within the Passover meal, there are four cups throughout the entire meal that are to represent the four promises of God made to his people. So let me show you that. But first, to get a little interactive, on the aisles, there are some piles of paper on your chair. So if you're sitting on the aisle, lucky you, if you could find those pieces of paper, pass them out. So hopefully we can get the kids a color in, and adults, because who says you can't color as an adult, right, guys? And there should be some pens around. I've got some markers up here. If anyone wants to come and like color, you do it. All right, so we're gonna dive into these four cups because it matters, and you're gonna see why. Here we go. So Exodus 6, verses 6 and 7 says this: I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will bring you out. I will free you. I will redeem you. I will take you as my own. This is what God is promising. So when a family would gather for a traditional Passover meal, it would begin with the first cup, which is often known as the cup of sanctification, stating, I will bring you out and I will set you apart as my own. This cup acknowledges that that is what God did, that he brought them out of Egypt. And then the people would wash their hands. But with Jesus and his disciples, we see something a little bit different. He doesn't just wash their hands. What does he wash? Their feet. He takes it to a whole nother level here. Let's look at the book of John, which is another account of the same story written by a different writer. In John 13, it says, so he, which is Jesus, got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Then skipping to verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. But now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. It's here in this Passover meal that the disciples begin to see that Jesus is doing something new with this meal. He's reframing the story and the experience itself. So next in the traditional meal, then, a story would be told. The story of freedom and redemption and the long journey the Israelites had through the promised land. And isn't it interesting that Jesus and his disciples have had quite a journey thus far together too? Then after the story and before the food, a second cup of wine is poured, often referred to as the cup of deliverance. I will free you. Honoring God's promise to his people to free them, to free you, to free me. And then the father of the family or the table would explain the elements of the meal, which are the unleavened bread, the bitter herbs, and the lamb. Isn't that interesting? For those of you who have been here the last couple weeks, remember the lamb? It's in these moments with Jesus and his disciples that Jesus actually reveals that he will be betrayed. Mark 14, 18 through 20 says, while they're reclining at the table eating, he, Jesus, said, truly I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me. They were saddened, and one by one, they said to him, surely you don't mean me. It's one of the 12. He replied, "One who dips bread into this bowl with me." And the disciples then, they look around and among each other in confusion as to who this betrayer may be. But only one of them knew in the core of his gut that it was him. And his name was Judas. The Gospel of Luke, which also includes the Passover story, includes these details. Now, the festival of the unleavened bread called the Passover was approaching, and the chief priests and teachers of the law were looking for some way to get rid of Jesus, for they were afraid of the people. Then Satan entered Judas, called Iscariot, one of the 12, and Judas went to the chief priests and the officers of the temple guard and discussed with him how he might betray Jesus. They were delighted and agreed to give him money. He consented and watched for an opportunity to hand Jesus over to them when no people were present. So in this space, within this Passover meal, there is some tension going on. Because A, Jesus is taking this long-standing tradition and he is doing something super different with it. And they're like, what's going on? The second thing is that now he's saying in this small group of people, hey, one of you are going to betray me. And Judas knows that it's him, and Jesus knows that it's Judas. But Jesus had also just bent down and cleaned the dirt off of Judas's feet. There's something drastically different and powerful going on in this particular meal. Imagine what's happening in Judas's heart. And imagine what is happening in Jesus's heart. And now, as mentioned before, the Passover meal would typically consist of unleavened bread, bitter herbs, and lamb. And Mark tells us in chapter 14, 22, that while they were eating, Jesus took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take it. This is my body." And then the wine. This is our third cup. It's called the cup of redemption, honoring God's promise, "I will redeem you." It means to ransom, to pay back, to rescue from captivity or bondage. The promise of God is, "I will redeem you." But how? How does God redeem? Verses 23 and 24 says, "Then he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many," he said to them. And then in regards to this same cup, over in Luke 22, 17 and 18, he says, "Take this cup, divide it among you, for I tell you, I will not drink again of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." So to try to put this simply, Jesus is taking this Passover story and experience and completely changing the narrative here. Instead of saying, "Remember then, remember when," Jesus is saying, "From now on, just remember me." He's now embodying the bread, the wine. He will experience the bitterness, and he is the sacrificial lamb. So to recap, cup one, "I will bring you out." Cup two, "I will free you." Cup three, "I will redeem you." But where is cup four in this story? Every traditional Passover meal would have a fourth cup called the cup of hope, that honors God's promise when he said, "I will take you as my own. When all is said and done, I will be yours and you will be mine." But there is no mention of this cup in this Passover meal with Jesus and his disciples. Let's also note here that in a traditional Jewish wedding ceremony, a groom would speak these same four promises or vows over his soon-to-be wife, with four cups of wine to toast each one. And when the bride would accept the fourth cup, she is saying, I accept, I do. I will be yours and you will be mine. And we are in a covenant relationship. So do you see what this means? When Jesus is in the garden and he says to God in desperation and turmoil and bleeding sweat, he says, take this cup from me. What cup? It's the fourth cup. Jesus knew in his gut the significance of this cup, and he knew that by accepting and drinking from the fourth cup, he's saying, I do. I accept these people as my own, but Jesus also knew that they were going to kill him. So when Jesus says, take this cup from me, it's as if he's saying, Father, do I really have to marry these people? Because I don't think they love me back. I don't know if they love me back. And in my personal opinion, I think that this is one of the most honest and real pictures of the humanness of Jesus that we see in the entire biblical story. Because are we not terrified, every single one of us, of not being loved back? He is so brutally and beautifully honest here. I felt in my own life the weight of wearing the ring of a committed engagement. This is before Dave, he's where I had said yes, and I felt so uncertain and so afraid. And I was not sure what the future held. And I remember standing next to my dad and looking up at him and just wanting him to know. I wanted to say all the things. I wanted someone, no expectation on him, but someone, anyone, to just step in and speak and release me of the commitment that I had made, but I couldn't expect them to know. No one knew what was really going on inside of me. But guys, this is Jesus, and this is God. And doesn't God know what Jesus is going through? And why has he not released Jesus from this? Why isn't he intervening? I mean, he could, right? Jesus pleads, will you take this cup from me, Father, Dad? But is he just being silent? Is this what God is like? Is he actually sleeping too? Have you asked those questions before? When you have maybe heard or even physically felt that silence? When you've needed to feel God or feel someone is aware that you're seen in the pain of your circumstances and that you need God to just for real, just like wake up, God, and intervene? Have you ever asked God to take a cup from your hands when the medical tests come back? God, take this cup from me. When your friends that you finally began to trust, they walk away. God, take this cup. When there's rumors about you flying around and a piece of your story has been robbed, take this cup. When you can't hear your baby's heartbeat, take this cup. When you are cornered or pressured or silenced, God, take this cup. When you're separated from your family, take this cup. When your reality and rights and privileges are not the same as the person next to you, God, take this cup. In our abilities, that's what we know how to do. That's how we know how to respond to things, to ask to ask God to take this cup. And I want to add here that that is okay. It is not unspiritual or wrong to plead with God in your pain or want or need. Because three times in this story alone, we can see that Jesus asked his Father to change the circumstances. If there was any other way, he's saying he would have preferred that. But the thing about Jesus is that he's also in the business of changing the narrative in the story about what humans think that God is really like. So here's how he responds after that. In the anguish and torment and blood, sweat, and tears, he says, "Father, all things, they are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, yet, not what I will, but what you will." He says, if this is how it needs to be, I am willing to walk that. Come on, who does that? He still says yes in the presence of a sleeping and silent and unaware group of friends. In the reality of knowing that he is staring into the eyes of death at the touch of these people's hands, he says yes, still, with everything that he is, his body, his blood, his soul, his heart, his entire life. So when we ask the question in this series, what is God like? God is the God who says, I will go through it all. I will go through betrayal for you. I will take this cup in my hands and I will drink the whole thing. I'm not saying I do just to part of you, you know, the good parts, the ones that follow all the rules and do things, all the perfect, right, Pinteresty ways. No, he says, I do to all of you, all that you are. Now, I know that there are elements to this story that still feel unresolved about how God responds to Jesus' questioning. Well, you're going to want to come back next week to hear more conversation on that. But let's just say this for today. Jesus said yes to you. He said yes to all of us. So what we do know about God is that through Jesus, he's willing to go through all the stuff with us. Our tendency is to want to clean things up. Pretty little bows and packages, all the questions and struggles that we have. I don't know about you, but my experience with any sort of question, struggle, or even pain is it just totally isn't that simple. Sometimes when we are going through stuff, we don't have the ability, like Jesus, to say, and yet, quite yet. We, as people, want to have all the answers to all the things, but it just doesn't always work like that. But I can't help but wonder if God might be okay with it. Because if God's intent was for us to know him packaged perfectly with ribbons and bows and to have all the answers for all the things and everything made sense, would we meet Christ, the Savior of the world, through a bloody and beautiful, horrible mess of a human birth? And would we learn about love and what God really looks like through the bloody, brutal, terrifying, and horrific crucifixion on a cross? Could it be that instead of everything making sense and not messy at all, that through these stories of Jesus' life leading up to his death and resurrection, that we're offered something actually more beautiful? And that he's just going to be present with us. And whatever it is that we're going through, After all, Jesus is the sacrificial lamb. And when he came into this world as a human like you and I, he was given the name Emmanuel, which means God with us. He's present and he is here. So we are going to take a few minutes to just be in presence with each other and in this space. In a minute, Kelly is going to come forward and sing a song. The words are on the screen. You don't have to sing along if you don't want to. But they're there for you to see and reflect. And when she is done singing that, we're going to enter into a time that we call open space, where there are just a few stations set up throughout the room that you can go to and to process and reflect. Or if you want to just sit and reflect in your chairs, that is fine too. So the stations today, over here on the table, we have the Eucharist, a communion table, because Jesus said yes to you and I by offering his body and his blood. So this morning we want to give you a chance to say yes back. The elements are at the table. There are gluten-free crackers there. If you need, you can come as a family or by yourself. There are no rules around this table, and all are welcome. Back there at that high top, there are some note cards and envelopes. Maybe you have somebody in your life that you're like, they need to just be reminded that God and you, Christ in you, is present with them in their life and what they're going through. So you can write somebody a note, and if you know an address, great, put it on. Otherwise, a first and a last name, and we'll figure it out, and we will send them where they need to go. On that high top back there is just an open notebook, a gratitude journal. Maybe your heart is just wanting to say thanks for whatever to God this morning. So you can just write back there in that. And then up here, we have, well, there's colorful paper and markers, because there's always space for that, right? Whatever, journaling, coloring, whatever you need to do. Then we've got a couple options for prayer request cards. Maybe you personally are feeling like you would like some prayer to seek God's presence within a circumstance in your life or someone that you know. But a small difference between the two. Over here, there's a closed envelope. So these are for prayer requests that maybe you don't want to share with the whole group, but would love to know that your pastors are, or leaders are, people are praying for you over. So you can write those and tuck them in the envelope there. Over here is a basket. If you have a prayer request that you would like and let us read aloud this morning, you could put those here, and that's how we're going to close our open space time together. So when you hear Kelly start playing some music again, and I will just start reading aloud these prayer requests, you can know to kind of make your way back if you haven't already, and then we will close together. Let me say a little prayer, and then Kelly's going to sing us into our open space time. God, I just want to say thank you. Just thank you that you have accepted us as your own, and that in your presence we are free to just be with you, even if things don't make sense or we don't have answers. We thank you that it is within your presence, God, that we can experience love. I thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So I pray a blessing in this space now as we enter into this time together. It's your name. Amen.